This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at the Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2024, held at Ephrata Business Center in Ephrata, Pennsylvania, on March 1 and 2, 2024.
Okay, welcome. Looks like it's pretty much 3 o'clock, and so I'll take my last sip here from my favorite mug. I like to keep this in the office just to remind me of what's important to the children I serve. It says, when is recess? So maybe that's why you showed up here today, because you were hoping there'd be some recess in this workshop. Brief introduction for those of you that might not know me. I'm Jeremy Souder from Mount Joy area. It's about 30 minutes southwest of here. My wife Diana is right here. We have Shayna, Cedric, and twins Nadia and Nicole. Nadia and Nicole are up high here, taking a risk that we'll talk about later. And Shayna and Cedric are climbing here at Lancaster Science Factory, where they got to go on a field trip the other week. So, the opposite of play is not work. It's, well, I'll let you consider that. Sometimes to consider what something is, it's helpful to think of the opposite. So, first of all, a story. On a hot Texas morning in August 1966, an engineering student named Charles Whitman climbed the campus clock tower at the University of Texas and started shooting people with deadly accuracy. He killed 15 and wounded 31 before being gunned down. Police later discovered he had killed his wife and mother the night before. At the time, it was America's deadliest mass shooting. And Governor Connally, who had himself been shot 3 years earlier in 1963, riding with JFK in that open car, wondered, what is happening in Texas? Why do we have all these murderers on the loose? And he authorized a committee and gave them unlimited resources to find out what was wrong with Charles Whitman. So when the small army of committee members met after researching, they were all people from different fields, so you would think when they came together maybe they would all have different opinions on what had caused Charles Whitman to go off the rails and murder people. But surprisingly enough, after a thorough investigation of Charles's life, the committee came to a unanimous decision that a lack of play in his childhood was a main contributing factor. Charles had a very controlling father. He wasn't allowed to play outside with other children, which used to be normal in those days. He was kept inside and told to do useful things like practice piano. Charles is obviously an extreme example of over-parenting, but from this we can see that the opposite of play is not work, it is depression. And by the way, this holds true for many other prisoners that were interviewed in Texas, resulting in the same thing, a lack of play being a key factor in that led to their crimes. So I'm going to start out with maybe some depressing realities of where we are in our nation today. And the goal for starting with these challenges is to show you where we are as a nation and to imply some of the benefits of recess and play, although later I will directly welcome, come on in, share some benefits of recess and play, and hopefully you can go home today with a renewed vision to analyze the spirit of play in your school and be proactive in planning for space and healthy play in your school. First of all, another story. A few months ago, I sat on the dentist chair as I got a root canal done, listening to the assistant talk to the dentist. And she was telling Dr. Teddy about her son, who's in fourth grade. He's getting in trouble at school. Honestly, she said, I think he's so smart, he just goofs off all the time. And he only gets 15 minutes of recess a day. My mouth would have dropped open if it wasn't already open. And the doctor said, yeah, that's not enough. We had 3 recesses when I was in school. So I wasn't sure what was worse, my root canal or what I was hearing. How did we get here? Until the late 1980s, it was not uncommon to have a full hour recess session and another one or two recess sessions in addition. However, in the 1990s, achievement test scores became a critical concern for legislatures. No Child Left Behind was passed in 2001 with this famous quip by President Bush, "Is our children learning?" And this tied standardized test scores to teacher performance, and many teachers felt pressure to perform or they won't get paid well. So you can guess, if more time is needed to teach the content that's going to be tested, something needs to be cut. So the things that aren't tested, like music and art, which are playful classes as well, and of course, recess got cut. And in many school districts in our nation today, recess and physical education have been severely reduced or even eliminated. And I had read about this, but now I have that anecdote from the dentist chair. Only 15 minutes of recess in elementary school, I can't imagine. So a lot of testing emphasis has been placed on high school. High school is to get ready for college, therefore middle school is to get ready for high school, and it keeps coming down through. Therefore, kindergarten is for college prep as well. In fact, I heard a story recently of a child who was failing their sounds and sight words in pre-K. Failing pre-K. I thought that was play. How can you fail play? But we're pushing performance down lower and lower. And this pressure reminds me of an old joke that my father and grandfather used to tell about the farmer who was training his horse to go without eating. Do you know this one? He kept reducing the ration every day and he just about had it trained, and then the horse died. So, if we don't give our students enough recess, they might up and die on us, or get depressed, or they will take their recess during class. American schools, which rank about 20th in the world, are leaning toward more and more classroom hours accumulated in a longer school day and less time devoted to lunch and recess. In contrast, high-ranking Finland, educators are opting for shorter hours and more playtime. And much of this play even occurs outdoors in Finland, which, as you know from your geography class, it's a little colder up there. That doesn't bother them. They still play outside even in the winter months because they're used to it. In fact, alongside their recess, sometimes they have 15-minute breaks between lessons to go outside. So the irony is that cutting recess to get students to do more work is having the opposite effect. They are literally falling out of their chairs in some cases, especially kindergarten or lower grades, either because of pent-up energy or poor balance due to lack of exercise in their development. So, more challenges. Children are sitting about 9 hours a day. 1 in 6, or 17%, children of school age have been diagnosed with some kind of developmental disability and need some kind of occupational or physical therapy. As you can see on our graph, ADHD is on a steady rise in our nation as well. About 11% of school-age children have been diagnosed with ADHD. About 6 million are prescribed Ritalin. It's just harder for the average child to sit still. One book I read recently about a substitute teacher's adventures in Maine, I believe it was, said about the only thing the children would be quiet for was read aloud. Reading fiction out loud. Anything else, the PA system, the teacher talking, even a video playing, that they would talk on top of that. They did whatever they wanted, except for when he read story. So there's a plug for, by the way, the number one thing you can do for young students to help them succeed in school is to read aloud to them. But back to recess, many children today just aren't in tune with their bodies. They're literally falling out of their chairs, running into each other, or having poor balance because their vestibular or balance system hasn't been stimulated enough by swings, hanging upside down, merry-go-rounds, or other dangerous things like they used to do. Less strength. A study in 2008 compared 315 10-year-olds to children of the same age in 1998. The ability to do sit-ups declined by 27%. Arm strength fell by 26%, grip strength 7%, the ability to hang by their own weight by 5%. Another test of core strength found the majority of children cannot meet the baselines of the 1980s. So, for example, of core strength, the ability to lie on your belly and hold your hands up in the air for a period of time. So these skills can be gained naturally by climbing on rocks, which is now considered dangerous, and basically any other boisterous activity that tests a child's limits, which is something they naturally tend to do outside unless they aren't outside at all or they're forbidden. Decreased muscle strength and more sitting time leads to poor posture and more chiropractor visits, with one chiropractor saying 30% of her clients are children. Allergies. More teachers report more tissue boxes are needed. More parents say their children have a cold all winter. Allergy rates are on the rise. From 2010 to 2016, Blue Cross Blue Shield did an analysis of 9 million children on health insurance and discovered 18% have allergies. So, do children have weaker immune systems? Could this be related to less play outside? At this point, it's a likely hypothesis waiting to be proven. According to one report by University of Michigan's Institute for Social Research, the average child in America, school age, spends just 7 minutes a day in unstructured outdoor play, which represents a 50% decline over the last 20 years. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, children school age now spend on average 7.5 hours a day in front of a screen for entertainment. Another study says 8 hours. Millennials, that's me, spend 23% of our waking hours on our smartphones. So that's about a quarter of our waking lives. The total number of teenagers who recently experienced depression increased 59% between 2007 and 2017. And you all know what happened in 2007. The rate of growth was faster for teen girls, 66%, than for boys, 44%. The smartphone. Emotional control. Teachers noticed children have been having more trouble controlling their emotions at school than they did 30 years ago. They cry easily in class or easily get frustrated. A rise in anxiety may be due to many factors, but one, I'll read a selection here to give you a picture. "I love camping," said 6-year-old Joelle to another girl her age. "We go in a tent. Do you go camping?" The other girl looked at Joelle with disgust. "Camping? With all those bugs? Ticks could be crawling under your tent. No, thank you." Joelle then lay down on a perfect patch of grass and squealed with delight. "Get up!" the other girl panicked. "There might be ticks in that grass. Ugly, awful ticks. Hurry, get up." She was stricken with fear. Are we raising our children to be fearful? In 1978, a toddler named Frank Nelson went up a 12-foot tornado slide, as pictured here on the right, with his mother just a few steps behind. But he fell through the gap at the top between the handrail and the steps, and not actually pictured here, he fractured his skull on the asphalt below. This left him paralyzed on his left side with permanent brain damage, including speech and vision problems. A year later, his parents sued Chicago and the companies that had installed and manufactured the slide and won $9.5 million. This was just one lawsuit and tragedy of that era that fueled a backlash of lawsuits against potentially dangerous playground equipment. Remember those tall slides? They just had one like this at Mountville Park close to us that they just took down a year or two ago. And the merry-go-round, how dangerous. So, Joe Frost, who was involved in pushing these lawsuits, actually repented in 2006. He began to question his earlier energy, and especially, for instance, after a lawsuit where a child tripped over a stump in a park, he thought maybe we went a little bit too far. What about the data, though? Surely we're all safer now that we've removed the dangerous playground equipment and have gone to rubber flooring. One other important concept here, before I go into the data, is not only did parks and schools start removing old equipment to avoid being sued, but in our nation, the cultural understanding of acceptable risk began to shift. Accidents became seen as preventable. If we're safe enough, children will never have accidents. Instead of, accidents are a natural part of life, and they may happen. So, have injuries been reduced? In 1980, hospital visits related to playground equipment were 156,000, or 1 in 1,452 Americans. 2012, 271,000, roughly, or 1 in 1,156 Americans. So, slightly lower, but then again, the percentage of kids who stay inside is higher. Even rubber surfacing hasn't seemed to contribute much to overall safety because, for instance, long bone injuries are on the rise or have increased. The theory is that the best theory is risk compensation. Because rubber isn't as dangerous, kids aren't as careful and end up hurting themselves more often or more extremely. We've had several chipped teeth and concussions from our big concrete floor in our big room. We discussed spending $50,000 or so on a rubber floor and decided not to. We haven't had as much injuries recently. I wonder if some of that happened after it was introduced, before the children got used to it and we established what games could or couldn't be played inside at high rates of speed. But we still have scraped knees and brush burn from playing on the blacktop out front. Both of my older children, Shayna and Cedric, broke their thumbs this year at school. So it's very dangerous to go to school. My daughter was playing kickball, and my son was, well, being a boy. You know what? God healed them. I like to quote someone not original with me, "I'd rather have a broken bone than a broken spirit." Also this year at our school, a first grade boy was hanging upside down on the parallel bar and fell not far, but he was upside down, so he landed head first on the concrete that unfortunately had become exposed due to erosion. So the next day I took wood chips in and put them there. And so I analyzed his skull and said, you're probably gonna need stitches. So sure enough, he needed stitches. Next day he was back chipper as ever, and I talked to Dad and apologized for not having a safe playground, and he was very understanding, very supportive of the risk and having his child hang upside down. So that's something that I'm thankful for, that we have in our communities, that we accept risk, because in the world today, many people have the attitude, an overcautious attitude, which then can translate to the children. So remember, boys need to hang upside down to stimulate their vestibular system, and we'll get more to that later. And another anecdote, this summer, Cedric was 9, first time for the boys camp out, our church camp out, and boy, it's different being a father. They were out there in the pond, I don't know, there's a lot of boys out there, and it wouldn't take much for one of them to disappear under the water and nobody to notice. So I found myself as a father in a new state of concern that I had never been in before for all these boys running around and doing risky things. So we are told that children actually need risky play in order to have appropriate development. Here are 6 risky play needs that children have. The first is exploring heights high enough to evoke fear. One study showed that children who injured themselves falling from heights when they were between 5 and 9 were less likely to fall when they were 18 years of age. You're all wondering what that says. Do you think I should have started with something smaller, like going up a ladder one rung at a time? Handling dangerous tools, sharp knives, scissors, heavy hammers, being near dangerous elements like bodies of water, going swimming, or fire. Rough and tumble play. Kids need to learn to negotiate right now, Nadia's favorite way to go to bed is upside down over my back, sack of potatoes. Speed, bicycling, running, learning to control your speed at a young age is good for development. Exploring on one's own in the woods, in the neighborhood, in the attic, or maybe being able to go away from home. One person has said children need to move in ways that make adults gasp, climbing trees, etc. So it's time for a brain break. Stand up and tell someone near you about a childhood play experience you had that children are not having the opportunity to do today because it's too dangerous. Maybe for me, I used to be able to ride bike to Grandpa's, but now maybe the roads in Lancaster County are so dangerous they can't even ride bike there. So what example can you think of or find out from somebody else? Go. Okay, thank you very much. That part of recess is over. You may be seated again, and we're going to continue. Maybe you can continue that discussion later when the real recess comes at 3:45. So, before we move on, I'd like to review or summarize some of the key points we've seen so far. So, recess time has diminished in the United States, but screen time has increased. We weren't created to be sedentary. They will take recess if we don't give it. It's not healthy to stay inside all day. Children thrive by challenging their bodies in some way, or no risk, no reward. So, the anecdote I started with in the beginning, recess has maybe gone down to 15 minutes in some cases, but they ought to have at least an hour. One researcher says they should play outside 3 hours a day, so hardly sustainable. Maybe if you have chores. See, we've gone away from living on the farm, where Al Manzo did a couple hours of chores in the morning before he went to school. That helps. Most of my farm children can do just as much or more schoolwork than the people that don't live on a farm. They can work on the farm and get their schoolwork done, and some others struggle sometimes. So children need to move, so recess is a human right. Their bodies are less ready to learn than ever before nowadays. It's increasingly rare to find children playing outside, rolling down hills, and climbing trees because merry-go-rounds and seesaws are just too dangerous. So moving on to benefits of recess and play, maybe some of these have been implied already, but we'll go through some directly. The brain becomes less efficient in academic work as time elapses. So movement will help students stay engaged and more attentive. And as I just discussed this with my teachers this week, my teachers testified to this effect, that if they give a little brain break and they go out and run around the school or something like that, they come back in, they're ready to get back to it. Reduces stress. Blowing off steam, sure, but also free play, where they can choose what to do, offers them a bit of independence and a break from the adult-driven activities, rules, and regulations that they live under all day. Improves attention and behavior. Teachers have observed that the longer the recess, the more attentive and engaged the children are afterward in the classroom. Again, some researchers say it really ought to be an hour long in order for them to get into the flow of it and get tired enough so that when they come back in, they're able to pay attention. Developing social skills. As children play with each other, they learn how to negotiate, take turns, communicate effectively, listen to others, assert their needs, deal with conflicts, create and follow rules, and practice leadership skills. As adults, we can try to teach these skills through books or tell them the truth, but actually playing with friends in the real world is the best way to practice learning these skills at a deeper level. Combats obesity. Roughly 20% of American school children are obese. Need I say more? Good posture, good core strength, Posture is helped when you push against the force of gravity somehow, and many hours sitting will lead to slouching and other weakness in core strength. So core strength can be developed by climbing trees, riding bikes, no need for weightlifting exercises if they lift their own weight. Core strength is related to good posture, spinal alignment for less back pain and headaches, etc. Fine motor skills. Fine motor skills are things like holding your pencil well, zipping up your jacket, cutting with the scissors, etc. So digging in the dirt, pulling weeds, stacking blocks, drawing with chalk on the driveway, and hanging upside down from the monkey bars are all good ways to develop strength for fine motor skills for when they come back inside. Stimulating the senses. You know the five senses, right? Taste, touch, smell, sight, listening, going outside, coming back in. Senses can be stimulated and more ready to pay attention, more alert. There are five senses, right? Wrong. Researchers now tell us there are seven senses. Let's look at how the other two are improved by recess. Proprioception, which is the ability to sense where your body parts are without looking. So you have sensory receptors in your joints, muscles, ligaments, and connective tissues. And if you think about it right now, you can probably figure out where your foot is. So the regulation of force you need to complete tasks like holding a baby animal without crushing it, writing with a pen or erasing without ripping the paper, are proprioception skills. So poor proprioception leaves children more susceptible to fractures, falls, dislocations, and injuries, and they tend to be more clumsy and have a hard time regulating how much force to use when hugging or playing tag. I read about one school that outlawed tag. They're pushing each other too hard because they haven't had practice somehow with proprioception skills. So they may fall out of their seats, literally, for some youngsters, or just fall frequently or trip going up the stairs. So proprioception is improved through the force it takes to push and pull tasks like raking leaves or shoveling snow, or for play, picking up sticks to build a fort. And another sense is the vestibular sense, which is simply put, your balance sense or balance system. So we have sensory receptors in our inner ear. Maybe you studied about the fluid in there in school. And as you get older, this fluid tends to gel or become stiffer or through underuse. So if you think about it, the older people don't generally enjoy merry-go-rounds or they have poorer balance. Healthy children, however, usually love merry-go-rounds and rolling down hills, and the more they do it in their developmental years, the better it is for them. The more dramatic our exercise, fast movements and hanging upside down, for instance, the more we stimulate our vestibular system. So, recess is good for us. In fact, NASA has a machine they put astronauts in before they go to zero gravity to improve their vestibular system and make them spatially aware of their bodies when they are going to be in a zero gravity environment. In one recent study comparing children to the balance baselines of 1984, the year our school started, only 1 out of 12 children have the average balance that kids had 30 years ago. So, for instance, the test was something like spinning in a circle 10 times with your eyes open and then doing it with eyes closed. And in both cases, kids would fall to the ground. So, what does balance, though, have to do with the classroom, coming back into the classroom? Our vestibular system is connected to our auditory and visual senses, so focusing eyes and ears, pretty important in the classroom. So poor vestibular sense will affect the other senses with the result of fidgeting, tears of frustration, aggression, and trouble with attention. So remember, walking and running do help stimulate the vestibular sense, but children will benefit immensely by hanging upside down, spinning, tumbling, swinging, and no, not those modern swings with the chains that are too short. The longer the chain, the better, maybe. So, in order to learn, children need to pay attention. And in order to pay attention, we must let them move. So, where are we at here? 3:30, time for another break. Wired magazine published the other year, the 5 best toys of all time. I'm preaching about this, you should do it. It's a nice day outside, so you don't have to participate, this is recess. But if you'd like to, I invite you all to walk out the front door, take a sniff of fresh air, and talk with someone or just brainstorm what you think the 5 best toys ever invented in the world was, Jesus' day or before to now, and come back in. So walk out, come back in, go. All right, while we're waiting for the others to come back in, you want to call out some of your ideas? Any ideas for the 5 best toys of all time?
Fishing pole, stick.
Stick is on the list. In fact, it's number 1. Anything else?
I looked it up, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Be quiet.
Ball?
Not on the list, sorry. It would be on my list for sure.
Bike? Bicycle?
Bike, okay. Very modern invention, but yeah. Anyone else?
Slinky.
Slinky, okay. Extremely modern. Yeah. What was that?
Box.
Box, okay, good. Well, here's their list. Box, string, cardboard tube, and dirt. So, what do all these toys have in common?
Cheap, easy.
Take imagination. It's not pre-described what you must do with this toy. They're all loose parts, things with no designated rule. So you might want to consider having some of these things on your playground that students could play with in free time. Going on, quick question, did Jesus play? See some nods, not sure. Okay, two things, probably ball games. Somebody mentioned ball. In that time period, they played with corn husks covered by an animal skin. So another thing we can guess, his dad was a carpenter, probably made him some wooden toys, some carved objects. Archaeologists have found some wooden toys. Could make money if you found the one Jesus played with. But more than his childhood, I'd like you to consider, we're going to talk more now about, you know, what is play and the spirit of play. So Jesus had a playful spirit. 1 week after his resurrection, he comes across his disciples that were out fishing all night with no luck. And he asks an obvious question. Did you catch anything? No. How about you try the other side? So you're in the boat. You were fishing on the wrong side of the boat, really? Don't the fish swim underneath? So, what a beautiful, funny human story. They were not at the temple where the things of God were discussed. They were out at the beach or walking on the water. If you read it in Mark, it implies that Jesus just came walking along and would have passed by. Now, he knew, right? So I take that to mean he acted like, I'm just walking here on the water. Oh, hi. It's a ghost, you know, their response. So he knew ahead of time what was going to happen. Jesus sometimes used a playful spirit. So some definitions of play. Play is something done for its own sake, and these are scientific definitions, not original with me. It is voluntary. It has inherent attraction, at least to you. It may be interesting to me and not to others. It has freedom from time or flow. I get lost in what I'm doing and have no trouble concentrating. I don't think about becoming hungry. I'm not thinking about those hunger pangs. People get addicted to gaming and go right through meals. And you're not locked into the box. You never really know what's going to happen. When we're in math class, we're pretty sure we know what's going to happen. But when we go out to recess, you never quite know. So, a value of play. I'd like to go on to some more definitions of play. But first of all, we tend to look at play as just something to let children do to get rid of excess exuberance. I can't get them to study, so I'm going to send them outside a bit. But learning, and this implies that learning is important and happens in classrooms. Recess is not important, it's just a break from learning. So, no surprise that a call for more rigorous academics cuts recess in gym. But recent research shows this is wrong-headed. If you're a kid, play is serious, and young children actually learn best through play. Some psychologists go as far as to equate the two. Play equals learning. So play is important in emotional, spiritual, and social development. It enhances our creativity, imagination. Here's a quote. The master in the art of living makes little distinction between his work and his play. To him, he's always doing both. So from this, we can see play is a state of mind. I love this picture because he's adding to the skyscraper, you can see. So is he playing or working? Some people are inside and they just sort of play around, and then other people go outside and build it. Maybe you've heard the quote or heard someone say they've never worked a day in their life. Is that true for you? So play is a state of mind. For instance, sometimes running is play and sometimes it isn't. What's the difference? Some people have fun running and some people never do it. So I'm having a lot of fun today presenting to you. I've enjoyed researching this as well, but it's been a lot of hours of work. Whenever we lose our joy in work, it should be a warning sign, like chest tightness for a heart attack. When the going gets tough, the tough go play. Firefighters, which I'm a volunteer firefighter, firefighters joke in tough times in order to cope with stress, and other professions do this as well. Another story, the story is told that Intel, a corporation you may have heard of, who used to make memory chips, about went out of business because of Japanese competition. The executives realized that if they didn't fix the money problem, they'd get fired and replaced with someone who could. So there's a story that they literally looked at each other and said, why don't we do what our replacements would do? So they pretended to fire themselves, literally walked out the door, and then came back into their office and said, now, what should we do? And they make microprocessors, and you probably have one today. So play can be productive. And in the mid-1990s, most business executives thought that WWW thing was just a useless, was useless for business and a waste of time in general. So taking a day off might give you an epiphany. God knew we needed breaks, so he created the Sabbath. Play is the oxygen of adulthood. Back to our first blank. We all need oxygen. Going on to principles of play, you've figured out by now that this is not a nuts and bolts workshop about how to have recess, but I was asked to share about the value of it. Here are a few principles to consider balancing assigned play and free time. Whenever something is assigned, it can become drudgery or homework. So make sure your students have the opportunity to have some free recesses where they can choose what to do. Balance supervision and freedom, which I'm doing right here. Playing with and observing. It's good for teachers to play with. It's also good for teachers to just sometimes let the students be on their own and observe from a distance. Taking recess for consequence and giving extra recess. You can take recess for consequences, but make sure the teachers don't overdo it, and now it shoots them in the foot because the children don't have enough recess and act up in class. And recess and class time. Elementary needs a minimum of an hour of recess a day, whether it's spread out or however you do that. This is just a quick picture to illustrate the snow day the other week. My children wanted me to come out with them, but I didn't. I was working. And if I would have gone out, they started making a snowman. They took three balls down towards the road, and then they were too heavy to lift up on top of each other. So if Dad would have been out there, I would have made the snowman for them. Instead, they made three seats and watched the traffic go by. So when you leave children on their own, they invented something that wouldn't have happened if I would have been there. Require play For instance, if you're having that lunch recess, we just had to break up a group of girls this week who was just sitting there. You know, you're out here to play, so make sure they are playing. Phys ed, physical education. I would encourage you to have a mix of sports play and skills teaching, but also value agility and exercise for life. Cardio fitness is something that comes naturally with hard physical work that less and less of us are doing every day. So it should be a part of our lives somehow. In our school, we just finished circuit training for a few weeks, and my wife does the girls' phys ed. We set up different stations where they go around the big room and have to do sit-ups, push-ups, jumping jacks, that kind of thing. And they have a set amount of time, see how many they can get done in that time. Now that it's spring, they will be running back and forth to the covered bridge down the road that's about half a mile away in order to get ready for the mile run on picnic day. So we can teach sports for teamwork, and excellence is good, but remember that we are our biggest enemy. So sometimes it can become easily about winning and not about growing, not about challenging myself, but you can have attitude problems. It can become, you can fill in the blank here. Sports can become a business, an obsession, a religion, an addiction, or it can be healthy. And something I don't have time to talk about is nature deficit disorder. But you could consider in your school, what are ways that you can make sure the children are playing outside, whether it's recess outside, outdoor classrooms, field trips, forest kindergartens are all the rage right now in some places. Gardens, a school garden. Where does our food come from? More and more people nowadays have no idea. It comes from the grocery store. So in conclusion, joy is the birthright of the Christian. Christian schools should be happy places. Play is the oxygen of adulthood. And just like oxygen, we don't miss it until we're suffocating. I'd like to finish with a story I read about people waiting in a pharmacy line, which is not the most exciting place to be. It was moving slowly because one lady was having problems with insurance billing issues, and one woman came to the line, went away, came back. And finally, the author said to this woman when she came back, "Ah, yeah, we all come here because we enjoy hanging out here. It's just a great place to spend time." She chuckled and others joined in. "Yeah, it's a great place to meet old friends. Yeah, well, I come here to exchange recipes." So soon everyone was laughing and joking, and one person said they had never had so much fun in line before. So go home and be playful, and encourage a playful spirit in your school. Thank you for your attention.